So, did your girls take same kind of classes you took when you were in high school, mm-hmm. college prep?
Right. Yeah.
They were goal oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Did you encourage them? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You wanted.
For one thing, my first husband, as I say, was a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and he went to college, and mm-hmm. I was in college, so college was sort of a very big part of our thinking.
It was really interesting because it was while your kids were after they were born, you were in college. So it's not like when, like me, you know, my parents went to college, but I don't know anything about when they went to college. Mm-hmm. I mean, so
right.
And they saw how you struggled to go through mm-hmm. college. They must
right.
have absorbed some sense of the importance.
Yeah,
of education.
A lot. Yeah.
You wanted your girls to be professionals, or did you have any goals for them when they were younger?
Well, yeah, sure. I think that that changed as I became more politically aware.
Mm-hmm.
My ideas of what one should do in one's life to be a successful person changed
mm-hmm.
a lot. I mean, career. The career model kind of dropped away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's sort of reinstituted now, of course. But, you know, that was a period where people were really, they were challenging such things as competition and career, you know.
Yeah. What about your daughters? Were they pretty liberal?
Well, I have a whole mixture, of course.
Yeah, there's four of them. All of the spectrum.
My oldest daughter
mm-hmm.
Was very active in high school,
mm-hmm.
very politically aware,
mm-hmm.
and in the time that she was there, did a lot to change a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she made quite an impact on her school as far as the sorority type system.
At her high school?
Yes.
They used to have sororities at high school,
mm-hmm.
wow.
They still do, at Eagle Rock High School.
Is that where they went?
Mm-hmm. And, my next daughter was not as active. In fact, I think I saw her suffering a lot.
Because of her sister?
Just because of all these things that her sister was fighting.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And my next daughter, in fact, she dropped out. And so did my next daughter. They both dropped out of school
mm-hmm.
at that time.
How did you feel about that?
Well, mixture of feelings. I mean, on one hand, it could be a big handicap to them.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I really saw the school system as being very powerful. So my younger children, I was able to put into an alternative school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was a big improvement. But my third daughter, she left home at a quite early age. But she went back to college.
No.
Or to college. She didn't bother with junior high school or high school. She went to college.
Oh, my gosh. Before they had these horrible rules where you had to prove you were a high school graduate.
Well, I think she challenged the tests and so forth up in Oregon.
Really?
And she became a librarian.
So she left when she was old?
15.
Wow. And went to Oregon?
All over the place. She went around all over the country with other people.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, it was a women's movement. There were places to go. I had friends all over the country.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't worry?
Yes, I worried.
You worry a lot.
Matter of fact, but she survived very handily. She now is in Montana. She and the man that she lives with own a video store.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think dropping out of school hurt her in the slightest. I think it hurt my other daughter a lot.
The fourth one or
the second one?
The second one.
I think.
What did she do after she dropped out?
Well, she went to Berkeley. She was part of the Hate Asbury thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in the riot. She did all the things.
So do you think you rubbed off more on your kids or they rubbed off more on you? Do you think they absorbed your feminist and more liberal values? What do you think? Absorbed theirs?
I think it was mutual.
Uh-huh.
I do think it was mutual. I think they educated me, and
mm-hmm.
I educated them. You know, we were all growing
mm-hmm.
together.
So it was just five women living together. When did you get remarried?
Very shortly. And I had two more children,
mm-hmm.
another daughter and
one boy
and a son. Yeah.
What was it like having a son after 5 daughters?
No, I had 3 daughters.
Three daughters and a son.
And then another daughter and another son.
Yeah. Oh, that would be hard to get used to after that.
Well, it was eye-opening to see how differently the world treated little boys. You know, like, in not a way that was very good for the little boy, actually. You know, people say, oh, you can't cry, you're a boy. Or, you like to wear dresses, oh, you can't do that, you're a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, men that would come up and start boxing, you know, with those two-year-olds, you know? I mean, that kind of real sexist type behavior. And, well, I think when my younger son was in the crib, really, which was sort of contemporaneous with some of the things I've been talking about, and I realized, I was taking a class in at Cal State, two classes, in fact. One was, I was taking a whole bunch of classes,
yeah,
but these two
particularly
with classes,
yeah.
One was on political sociology.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher in that class was a man named Sax Fernandez, who's done a lot of outstanding work in power structure research with an organization called NAFLA, North American, it's an acronym, but I can't remember all the, anyway, they research out the power structure.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very, what shall I say, eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the fact that, you know, he opened up his class and said, I'm not going to tell you that this society is, you know, has a military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
He said, it is a military-industrial complex. And he went on to, you know, prove that. And then I was taking this other course in demography as part of my, you know, social research. And they were talking a lot about overpopulation, and talking about the lack of food, you know, all the scarcity, the pollution, et cetera. So between the two classes, here where he says in 25 years, you know, there'll be a nuclear holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And the other where in 25 years there will be mass starvation.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that, 1960? So, or 62 or 3. So
we're there.
Or no, 70. No, I'm sorry. 69, 70. No, we're not there yet, but we're almost there.
Yeah.
We're getting close. And so they were giving me nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I think today people are, you know, really get involved and learn what's going on with our environment, or, you know, other world events can get pretty depressed, pretty freaked out.
I've personally been depressed for two days since the election. Oh, I've just been in, like, I've been walking around being depressed out of this for 4 more years. What are you going to do? Walk around being depressed for 4 more years? You just have
right.
to, you know.
Exactly.
You can't do that, you know. Did that really spur you to try and
that
change.
Really, it did.
Scared you. I got to do something.
Exactly.
Make this a world for my kids.
Exactly. It was really on that very basic, that was the real drive. Even though my own, obviously I was interested in my own mental health and my own progress as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Because for one thing, I became aware of how those things are linked. I mean, that how can a woman work for the welfare of her children if she herself has, you know, no ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, here I put in all this time as a volunteer and helped all these kids. I mean, I really can think of, you know, a lot that I accomplished in the way of making a lot of young women have a much more constructive, happy, you know, adolescence.
Mm-hmm. Were you a cadet leader, or did you do juniors? I was a girl class for 6 right. years, so I know almost all the ranks. Right. Did you like to work with the older girls better, or the younger girls?
Well, no, I first started with the Brownies.
Did you start with one of your daughters? Yeah. Is that how?
Uh-huh, and then the juniors, and I assisted in the cadet mm-hmm. level, but I went over into the day camp director. I
kind of
You know,
for the summer.
More administrative mm-hmm. in my activities, more organizing.
When did you stop doing that?
Well, when I started becoming more politically aware, because I realized that I was making things better on an individual basis for people.
Mm-hmm.
But here on this grand scale, these other people were making things so rotten.
You were never going to catch up.
That is right. I was never going to catch up, and neither were all of us together ever going to catch up, you know, and that I really became convinced that volunteerism was a big mistake, and mm-hmm. that it just helped them to keep going, because it just kept it from collapsing its own weight,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I completely quit that.
So what was your big action? What did you, after you decided that you had to do something, what did you decide to do?
That's when I started going to NOW mm-hmm. and getting into the abortion movement.
That is.
I really think that's
this is before abortion is legal, right? So what was NOW doing?
Well, abortion was legal in California. It was legal in 1967,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't available. I mean,
that was the one where you had to prove that your life was in danger or your mental stability was threatened.
Right, exactly. So at that particular juncture, it was available mostly for well-to-do women who could go to their private doctors
mm-hmm.
and some at free clinic.
Mm-hmm.
There was a certain amount of women, you know, more
yeah.
and more. But it was still pretty expensive, and as a matter of fact, I myself had an abortion at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That was my second abortion I've had, and the first one was illegal, this one was legal. I don't think the legal was
much better
than the other, because I had to say that I would commit suicide if I was forced to remain pregnant. I know, it just stuck in my throat.
I'm going to kill myself. Swear to God, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
So you just didn't want more children, or?
Right. I just thought 6 was fine.
6 is enough. I don't need to go up to 8. 6 is fine. So were you on, did you now have a task force, or?
Yes. The first night that I went, when I signed up, you know, that you fill out a form.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you interested in? And I signed up for the abortion task force.
Mm-hmm.
And Lana Phelan was the head of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've heard of her, but she's a very, very influential person, did a lot
mm-hmm.
at that time. She and a woman named Pat McGinnis
mm-hmm.
wrote a book called The Abortion Handbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I've heard about.
Yeah. And they traveled around the country,
mm-hmm.
literally. And she had scrapbooks, you know, and holding town meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And just getting run out of town and almost getting arrested.
Oh, my God.
In fact, Pat did ultimately end up getting arrested and had to go to trial, you know, for advocating abortion.
It was illegal in addition to have an abortion and to advocate it?
Oh, yeah. It was very illegal to give out information. About it.
Margaret Sanger, doesn't it?
It's
amazing to think about that, you know?
It is. So I sort of understudied Lana.
Uh-huh.
I'd, you know, go around with her, and she was a terrific speaker and very well researched
mm-hmm.
and everything.
Did you travel with her?
Around town.
Yeah.
You know, this was locally. And I did a lot of research
mm-hmm.
on it. And it became... I sort of became obsessed with the whole thing
mm-hmm.
because it was like this huge boulder, you know, that we just couldn't push out of our way. You know, it was this huge, horrible boulder. And how do we get these laws? And why do people, you know, how can they stand for this? And why does the legislature always vote against this? And, why do so many women die, etc. So I had that kind of mental state.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, at the Women's Center, they were referring women to get abortions at an illegal clinic in Santa Monica. Santa Monica Boulevard, I should say, West Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And so I went along with the women that we were referring.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw, well, first I saw a woman's survey.
Mm-hmm.
Before I actually saw an abortion, I saw someone getting an IUD put in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, the minute I saw this woman's survey, I knew what the whole thing was about. I mean, remembering, I brought with me all of these, you know, agonizing questions. And I just had them answered in one single flash. Because abortion is the safest, simplest procedure. I mean, and we are built in such a safe and simple way. And I realized that it was absolutely essential to the male power structure to keep us ignorant of our bodies. I mean, I really understood that that was not just a cultural hang-up. It wasn't just a holdover. It wasn't a byproduct of, you know, some other cultural strain or whatever. I realized it was a very, very essential underpinning of sexism. You know, the sexist rule.
Mm-hmm. So this is when you started getting involved with the woman at Every Woman?
Yeah.
At the bookstore?
And yeah.
Like there was a center over there, too?
There was a bookstore. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so, well, we, that, as I say, I was at that point involved with other women at the mm-hmm. Women's Center.
And at Now.
And at Now, right. And
had Now already left the Women's Center?
Yes.
Yeah. So you were between the two groups?
Well, we started our own group.
Oh. Who's the best answer?
Right.
Did you feel a conflict between, because it was Now that you went to first, and...
Well,
I understand it got sort of nasty.
There certainly were some stresses and strains. Mm-hmm. Our particular group sort of steered clear of that because we had a foot in both worlds.
But politically, who did you feel closer to?
Actually, I have to say both. We agreed with Now in the sense of needing organization and needing, organization and structure.
Dealing with like, the problems and the society
structure.
And things like
right.
that.
Yeah, we really...
As agreed. Opposed to the leaders.
Yes, yes. On the other hand, we were housewives ourselves, and we were... not wanting to, you know, get into this professional kind of situation of fighting to get more women attorneys or whatever, women accountants. You know, that was not what we saw as the primary.
It was more personal focus. Type of thing for you.
Exactly. The personal,
so that was
political.
The Women's Center type.
Right. So we really, so we felt a lot of, but we felt rapport with both groups.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, what really sparked a lot of our growth was that we gave a program at the national conference.
Earlier than you gave the one at the local, right? It was in what, the 1970s?
Yeah.
One that you gave it at the big LA Now.
Right.
I mean, the big Now convention that just happened to be in Los Angeles at the time, and not till later that you did one at the local. I thought that was interesting. I was like... Because then I thought, well, okay, maybe there was, like, a lot of conflict, which I had read a lot about the Women's Center and Now. But I hadn't read a lot about your particular group either, like, there was a lot of conflict, and I'm like, well, okay, maybe there was a lot of conflict because I didn't do anything with the local chapter. And I'm like, well, maybe it was just the local chapter didn't think about it until the national chapter had it done.
I think the local chapter at that time was focused more on of Now.
Mm-hmm.
Was focused more on sort of political, you know, type issues. And it so happened that the chairperson of the abortion task force happened to be someone that had originally been in our clinic, in our group, that we had a schism with within our own small group.
So who was that?
Her name is Mary Petrinovich. So that made us not have too much to do, you know, but it wasn't because of the NOW organization per se at all.
You were well received at the National NOW, weren't you?
Very.
You did that.
Very. It was tremendously well received. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, women were lined up in the halls. It was far more than we ever expected, you know.
Because it was one of the little things, right?
Totally.
All the small little groups that they had during the day. Yeah. And you got a big turnout for yours.
Absolutely. And the women came and they did self-examination, and then we'd get a speculum, and we'd put it in a little round bag.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon, all of
them were sleeping in the round bag. So by now, what are your goals? Now that you're working a lot in this and trying to promote self-help.
Are you talking about now?
Now that you're at the point when you're into it, you're doing demonstrations. What are you hoping for? To show every woman in America her cervix? Or?
That's a pretty good definition, yes. We really thought that if we could get the idea of self-help out primarily to the women that were more interested.
I mean, you utilize the feminist network pretty much
aware.
You're traveling and
things. Yeah. And the women's, we'd go like to the Women's Center and to the NOW chapter and to pro-choice, you know, people who are working on that issue.
You traveled extensively. I mean, every time I picked up an issue or something, well, Lorraine Rothman and Carol Danner have just been in Iowa, Ohio, and Wisconsin, and they're flying to Europe next year so they can share this with the rest of the world. It was, like, amazing. How did you pay for this? I mean...
We paid for it by the sale of speculums.
Plastic speculums.
That's right.
Wow. Self-financed.
Exactly. We were totally self-financed.
Now, was there...
And we stayed in people's houses. We took our sleeping bags with us. I mean, we took the bus. The first bus.
Wow.
And we flew back. We made enough.
Enough money the next time to fly. And how old are your kids by that time?
Well, are
they all gone? But then you've got such a range. They can't all be gone, you know?
No, they weren't. My eldest daughter was starting the Oakland Women's Health Center. And the other two, as they say, had left. So it was really my son and my two sons and my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a child care component of our group. So we collectively.
So what's your husband think about all this when you were doing it?
Well, he was a little bit blown away by it all.
That's a perplexing thing to say. There I saw a cervix today. I decided to make this the rest of my life.
And he was sort of used to me being involved.
And he shared your sentiments about liberal.
Yeah, he was very happy to see me happy
because
I had been pretty morose there for, you know, when the kids were only really little.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get out and do anything. So in a way it was, you know.
He was glad to see you excited about something.
Right. And he liked the people that I...
Mm-hmm.
Associated with. You know, I mean, he benefited from that.
So now when you went on the road, he took care of the kids?
Well, the first time he did.
Mm-hmm.
The first time. We had a child care person down the street who watched the kids during the day. Right. But after that, no. we were, not because he wouldn't, but because we had a cohesive group and we handled it ourselves.
So some of the other women who were still here took them?
Right.
What does your husband do?
He is a, what do you call it? He's a supervisor of collecting Medi-Cal, you know, at the county.
Oh,
Senate.
Yeah, okay.
He's a bureaucrat.
Yeah. Paper stuff, you know, I got it. Yeah, so regular, though, 8-to-5-time job.
Right. It was quite a contrast because my older children, I had put a lot of my time and energy into, not only their scouting activities.
But everything.
Everything. Their school, their field trips, their friends, their parties, et cetera.
Do you think you thought that was so important? Before you said that your parents were sort of laissez-faire, did you feel deprived as a child of all that attention?
Yes, I did. Yes, I was envious of some kids that had obviously more... you know, of that kind of lifestyle in
Well, the leave could be every time.
Right.
Okay.
When I became an adult, I realized the shortcomings of that lifestyle. I mean, I don't, you know, that really wasn't my
good. Not mother love, but, you know, attention.
Right. I did, really, the reason that we did this was because we were part of that era, of which today is even worse. I mean, really.
But you're talking to somebody who took every lesson under the sun. I was like, I was shuttled from baton to horseback to gymnastics
right.
to ballet to piano. I mean, I've taken it all.
Yeah, my kids swimming lessons.
Yeah.
You know, never occurred to me that I could swim.
Yeah.
You know, but all I could
my mother used to sit there and write letters while we were doing all
right.
this because it was too far to drive back home and come back and get us because I grew up in Agora, which wasn't connected to anything back then. So she'd just sit there, you know. I never thought about that, you know.
That
I think, am I going to sit while my kid takes all these lessons? Forget it. No way.
No way. Well,
I didn't that's wasted time.
And it worked out much better.
Really? I was going to say, there must be a big difference because in the way that you're two like sets almost as kids were raised, one set, you know.
One
welfare and, you know, this mother who was, like, running around doing, you know, all these things.
It is, totally.
So what do the younger set of kids do now?
Well, my son is in college.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to L.A. City College.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a heavy metal drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And my other daughter is in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to college.
Mm-hmm.
She's studying to be a linguist.
Oh.
That's what she's heading for. Would you like the lozenge?
Sure.
I have a sore throat here. It's really good.
I think I'm going to get an ear infection, unfortunately.
Oh, well, this will help. I mean, it won't hurt. Let's put it back.
Nothing ever hurts.
Yeah. It's honey flavor.
So this lovely actress, the younger one, this is a whole different time.
Yeah.
Like your son who's going to college now has got to be my age, basically, 20 or so.
Yeah.
This is a whole different time frame than your daughter, you know, who are older.
No, they're not really. I mean, they're politically interested.
They're aware, of course,
and
looking at you.
You know, certainly we have a lot of rapport. Their sentiments are there as far as, oh, for example, the Contras, you know, the Contras, et cetera. Those types of issues, either against nuclear power, et cetera. But they don't go to demonstrations, they don't go into groups, they don't. It's just, I've asked myself how much of this has to do with the times and how much of it is to do with just inclination that some people are more. I mean,
well, your three older girls, one was particularly active when she was in high school and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other one hitchhiked around and stuff and went to college, which could sort of be seen as, you know, being active. That's part of like, and then the third one just dropped out and moved to Haight-Ashbury.
Uh-huh.
Those are all, like, fairly, you know.
Variations.
Of an activist theme. But then you'd have to ask yourself, well, was that a product of the time? Because at the time, I guess, you know, not being like that, I don't know. I don't know how much of an influence there would be, but from what you read, it seems like everybody was doing that.